Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special simulcast of The Neil Haley Show and Freedom from Addiction here on Libsyn and other podcasting networks, plus on my nationally syndicated show, 150-plus stations all over the world. And we have another great segment that Wynn's bringing us, Freedom from Addiction, Truth Just Below the Surface. And we're getting very close to the election. Everyone's getting anxious. And as I was talking off air with our guest, I am very excited about this guest. So Wynn, introduce him.
Thanks, Neil. Dr. Caxton O'Pare is a board certified internist with over 30 years of clinical experience in hospital medicine, emergency medicine, and critical care medicine. He is on the front lines as a COVID-19 expert, treating critically ill COVID-19 patients in COVID units, emergency rooms, and hospitals, and helping find solutions to the current pandemic in the United States. Dr. O'Pare has been on this program probably three times previously, and you can scroll down and see some of his earlier shows. What we're going to do today is talk about his new book. It's called The HCQ Debate, and the subtitle is, What Did Researchers Hide About the Hydroxychloroquine COVID-19 Clinical Trials, and Were Lethal HCQ Doses Given to COVID Patients? Dr. O'Pare, it's nice to have you back on the show again.
Thank you. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Wynn.
So the HCQ debate answers some very tough clinical, ethical, research, and scientific questions using the information already published in reputable world-class medical journals. This is the book every attorney, primary care doctor, healthcare professional, seasoned, honest journalists, the general public, victims of COVID-19, and their families have been waiting for. Jackson, it's nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
We're going to start with a question about the $4.5 trillion profit scenario. We always follow the money to find out what's happening with these tough questions, and tell us what's just below the surface here with the money.
Yes. When I looked over the beginning of the COVID up till this point when I published this third book, what was driving me to write the book was, why isn't there any information from the CDC, NIH on what doctors can do? In the past, even when there's an epidemic or pandemic or just a rapid spread of an illness, we always got information real quickly from the CDC saying, hey guys, we don't have a cure, we don't have a treatment, but you guys can do the following. For 7 to 9 good months, there was absolutely nothing on the CDC website except don't. And that's what drove me to write the first book, the second one, and this one. And as I was writing this one, it became clear that there's some information that's been withheld from the public. And that the question is, if people are dying, why will that information be withheld? Turns out, when you put all the pieces together, and it's not any hard science to figure out, the politicians, the policymaker, healthcare policymakers in government and all these other institutions, and even researchers, they are all in the pockets of Big Pharma. Then the article came out in JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, in March 3, actually, to be precise, of the American Medical Association, saying that for the last 20 years, between 1999 and 2018, Big Pharma has given $233 million a year to presidential candidates, senatorial elections, and stuff. And you know, the only person that I see that cannot get that kind of money is Donald Trump. So when you look at it, this is the only man that really has money that doesn't need anybody else's money. But the key thing here was, how much money are these people planning or hoping to make that will make them want to kill as many people and not care about who they kill? It's a lot of money. And this is just calculations, very, very minimally calculated, that, for example, at 1100. Remdesivir was brought on the market at 1100 a piece. And if you give $1,100, 100 million people, that's $110 billion. And then we looked at drug prophylaxis. If they come up with a drug that can be used for prophylaxis or early treatment by Big Pharma, and if you say it's $1,100 per person and you want to treat a billion people at least, that's another $1.1 trillion. So the amount of money, when you look at vaccines, some of these vaccines are not only dangerous when you look at the process for making actual vaccines themselves, but if you look at how many people they will want to vaccinate, even at $1,100 again, I'm just using that number, $1,100, because Gilead came up with $1,100 when they first introduced remdesivir. So I put a standard there. Say three people, one person is getting three vaccines because they'll tell you, oh, the first one didn't work, you need a booster dose. So if you give 3 billion people 1,100 vaccines each time, you come up to about 3.3 times 3, $9.9 trillion. And everything points towards money. Nothing here, because every research that I've looked at over the decades that I've been a physician, most of the time, the advantages of a drug are explained to people and they hide the side effects. But with hydroxychloroquine, it's the opposite. And ethically and intellectually, even the best critical mindset people don't understand this inverse relationship. You know, when the FDA looks at your clinical trials, they usually force you to produce the negative results and say, you need to show us these things. And but with hydroxychloroquine, every good thing about hydroxychloroquine is being hidden because it's a cheap drug. It will cost you about $6 or less to get treated. And the treatment for COVID should be done at the earliest possible stages because we have the science, I mean, exact, precise scientific principles and actual treatments that show not only that hydroxychloroquine works, it's the only one of few things that actually work and should be given early, but it's extremely cheap. And by using it, it doesn't require a lot of other things. You don't have to be in the hospital. It's a pill. You don't have to get any shots. If you're exposed today and you're scared, you don't have to be scared. You just start taking the hydroxychloroquine. And what they're supposed to do is to do clinical trials to show who is hydroxychloroquine going to work for? Who is it not going to work for? I don't see any of those kinds of things. Instead, they do all these shoddy research studies that don't even have the right types of conclusions. And then at the end of those papers, if you read the actual research document, it will say, we're not sure whether hydroxychloroquine will or will not work, but our study, which was done shoddily or reported shoddily, shows that hydroxychloroquine is ineffective in the early phase, et cetera, et cetera. And it makes absolutely no sense from a clinician's perspective, from someone who loves to read and research and find solutions to problems in science, in medicine. This is one of the greatest frauds of the 21st century. And I think somebody ought to be held responsible for it.
Okay, so you follow the money, it comes back to Big Pharma.
Yes.
We have been listening to Dr. Fauci talk for months now, and he says something that he didn't say before. He contradicts himself. He changes his position and everything. And you have a chapter on Dr. Fauci. It was chapter 3. Can you go over some of the high points?
All right. So enter Dr. Fauci. This is the trigger for me writing this book. I know I've always, you know, known Dr. Fauci as far back as when AIDS was first, you know, introduced as an illness with the defining criteria in 1983. But following him over the years and observing, one of the things that struck me was, if I know what Dr. Fauci knows, America will not be having this number of deaths. But let's go a little further. The NIH and Big Pharma are the two donors, major donors to research in the U.S. And as we know, NIH even did some work with China on COVID as far back as 2017. But on July 29th, it was actually a replay on July 31st that I heard. I've been following the guy, you know, and then I said, this doesn't make any sense. You know, we're looking at all these papers, and Dr. Fauci will come on TV or on air, and he will say, oh, the science and the data, the science and the data. And I said, what does he mean by science and data? All these papers that we're looking at show that if you analyze hydroxychloroquine, it actually is not only effective, it's very effective. They're using the wrong statistical operations. He should know that more than anybody else. So I looked at, on that day was July 31st. It was a Friday. And I heard him say, hydroxychloroquine is ineffective. Oh, that got me so mad. And that's what drove me to write this book. And, you know, when, if I give you some of the highlights, I think when President Trump announced that hydroxychloroquine was effective, I think Fauci got mad. And whether he had another ulterior motive behind getting mad, I'm not sure. I'm not even sure what the guy is doing or thinking, but I think it's pretty clear. The studies that he sponsored by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, one of those studies, and these are biased studies, one of them is called the Boulware et al. Study. After they did the study, this is one of the weakest studies. And if you read the entire thing, it's a New England Journal of Medicine. Actually, it was in July, in June, and they republished it in the August 6, 2020, New England Journal of Medicine, Boulware. This was a study done between Canada and Minnesota, Montreal and Minnesota. And when they finished that study, they concluded in the abstract section that hydroxychloroquine is ineffective in preventing infection. Here's a strange thing. Dr. Fauci sponsored that study. When you look at that study, the study was supposed to see whether hydroxychloroquine, if given to people who were exposed, had a very high exposure. Maybe they were in a room as a family member or in the hospital as a healthcare worker with someone who, you know, had COVID-19 confirmed positive. So when you go into a room with that kind of person, COVID is really rapidly, it's highly contagious and deadly. You're going to get it. So they looked at people who didn't have a mask or face shield, went into the room, about 87.6%. And so you pretty much know that when these people went into that room, they were already COVID-19 infected.
Okay.
But rather than actually start treating them right away, they waited 4 days. They were mailing papers to them. They were mailing drugs to them, which sounded okay until you now ask them, what is the conclusion? What is the purpose of your study? The purpose of your study is to find out whether hydroxychloroquine prevents infection. But you didn't even test these people who are the highest possible risk. If you're going to get COVID, that's how you get it real quick. And they never tested any single one of these people before starting this study, which makes absolutely no sense. And then they found that 107 of them were positive. Now, even this positive 107 of them, they only tested 16 people for COVID. They were using symptoms. Okay. Neil told me he came down with a cold that lasted about 2 weeks. I came down with a cold about 2 days ago, you know? So
it's finally going away. Wednesday was 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then I still have a semi little cough. I'm talking to two doctors now, okay. But I want to jump really quickly into this. The fact is, we talked off air, Dr. Caxton, and I really see that specifically enough, you're putting yourself on the line.
Okay.
Out. Are you a fearful at all by putting this out there that you could lose your license or be?
No. I have all the information. I have the data, the so-called science and data that Fauci is referring to. Actually, the second book I wrote, Physician Treatment Strategies, I explained how hydroxychloroquine should be used, how they deceived the American people and told us to be using hydroxychloroquine late when it should have been early. The physiology is there, the mechanisms are there, and I sent a copy of that to even the governor of Texas, and he thanked me for the book, Dr. Governor Greg Abbott. You know, so there's no way my license can be lost from this. There's no, it's
so what
not
happened
possible.
To all those doctors that spoke out in Washington, D.C., and how they got pretty much ostracized?
Yes, there are two things here. It's the big pharma thing. Big pharma has its tentacles all over the place. I work as an independent contractor. Wow. If I worked in one hospital,
you'd be fine.
Somebody can walk up to my CEO and say, we need you to tell your employee to cease and desist. I don't work in any hospital per se. I work in different hospitals around the country. And it's going to be hard-fetched for them to say, hey, look, everywhere, don't let this guy work. We are exposing what they're doing. And there's no way around that exposure. The only thing they can do is put a bullet through my head and everybody will know who did it.
Well, we have that on tape just in case. I mean, that's
yes.
With the Biden crime family. I'm just kidding. But again, I think also when they're very fearful of Trump wins because of the decrease of medications, his health plan he's trying to create, or at least is signed into play. Lots of medicines are going to be very inexpensive starting in January.
Yes.
They don't want that at all.
Oh, yes. I mean, picture this. When I said they give $233 million to senatorial elections, and this was documented, they gave in 2011, this guy called Peter Wariski wrote an article and he followed the money. He said, NIH, the National Institute of Health, gives all this grant money. In 2011, Big Pharma top pooled NIH. The NIH gave $31 billion that year. Guess how much the Big Pharma gave for research that year? $39 billion. That doesn't include the $233 million that they paid to senatorial candidates and presidential candidates, you know, for election purposes so that they can squeeze in and, you know, control policymaking. If you see how ugly this policymaking is, in the actual book itself, you'll be angry because they lock everybody down. They're basically saying you cannot prescribe hydroxychloroquine. It's not safe. But let me tell you this. The majority of people that have crippling rheumatoid arthritis or really bad rheumatoid arthritis, some of them start when they're young, but most of them, they're when they're older. And so it's a drug for older people. So when they come up with a safety issue with hydroxychloroquine in someone who is taking it for 5 to 7 days maximum, it's insanity. The old people are taking this drug and it's actually got a long half-life. You know, it's there in the blood for at least 40 days. There'll still be a 10% of that drug that you take on day one on the 40th day. That's how, you know, prolong the half-life of hydroxychloroquine is. And a lot of old people are taking this drug with no real problems, except taking care of the problem that the medicine is helping them take care of. So when they say, if you're going to use hydroxychloroquine, it's going to be a 5 to 7 day stint. How is that going to be a problem? Even if it has some toxicity, what kind of toxicity are we talking about when the proper dosing is given? I'll give you another illustration. There's a recovery study that was done in England, and those guys are murderers. In my opinion, they were given 4 times the dose of hydroxychloroquine, and we all know what that will do. It will kill them, basically, and a lot of patients died, and that was a recovery study that they stopped. My thing is, why are you killing people? If you don't have the ingenuity to come up with a drug, then let people start using hydroxychloroquine. Don't tell people not to use hydroxychloroquine except in a clinical trial, because doctors are using it anyway, whether or not you like it. Why not let people use what they can use? If you come up with something better, we'll use it. But they create all these policies saying don't use it for pre-exposure, like the Boulware study that I just mentioned. They said, if a person has been exposed to it, don't give them hydroxychloroquine. But hey, if I get on the plane tomorrow and the airline calls me the next day and says, hey, somebody that was next to you on the plane died of COVID, please get to your doctor. That fear, I mean, it's horrible. But if you have hydroxychloroquine, it works. And you started that early. Your doctor may give you 2 doses, 1 dose, 4 doses, but you'll be fine. Those are the studies they're supposed to be doing, Neil. And they're not doing the studies. And unfortunately, we now have doctors who just prescribe it, and they tell the patients who want to have it, no, we're going to give it to you for another indication, but use it for this indication. So they will never know the truth about the impact of hydroxychloroquine. And the doctors are now becoming a silent group of doctors who are prescribing it. You cannot tell me not to prescribe something that I decide based on pathophysiology that it works. You can't tell me how to practice medicine. You can highly recommend against its use. But when you highly recommend against its use, it just means if something goes wrong, I'm very liable. But outside of that, when I know something works, we are using it ourselves, we don't really care what Fauci says. They're just a bunch of corrupt people who want to create a vaccine, use it to control people and control the scenario. And I don't know what kind of Napoleon complex is bothering Anthony Fauci, but that control thing about, you know, this drug, hydroxychloroquine, and whatever they want to come up with, they can't come up with anything better than hydroxychloroquine. It seems obvious. Because when you think of a drug, you think of it in terms of, number one, is it affordable? Is it easy to manufacture? Is it got known side effects and a safety profile? How easy is it to use? At least those things. And we know hydroxychloroquine has all those things in its corner. And no one is coming up with anything better than that, except expensive drugs, vaccines. And by the way, Neil, vaccines are not going to be the way to go. You know, when Fauci was saying, when H1N1 came on the scene, when he was saying that this was several years ago, 2009, when we had the bird flu and they made a vaccine, a lot of people, you know, got so many horrible side effects from the vaccine. They sued in London, AstraZeneca. But here we have Dr. Fauci at that time, even in August, when people were starting to accumulate lawsuits in court, telling the American people that the vaccine is okay, but they withdrew the vaccine. And now we have a situation where vaccine should be tested in monkeys, in mice, before it's tested in healthy male volunteers and then female volunteers. And then if it works, follow the offspring of women in their reproductive years who got the vaccine and see whether the children have any problem with it. And these things take decades. It's not because we're not smart enough to come up with a vaccine, but we cannot predict the adverse effects of the vaccine. And for somebody, you know, to say 1 month after the vaccine is manufactured that, oh, it's safe. Safety is irrelevant at this point. You don't even know what safe is. People can start having psychiatric problems, schizophrenia. Yeah. They can have all kinds of things. So the vaccine, you know, if a scientifically minded person who understands medicine and vaccines is telling you 1 month after a vaccine is manufactured that, oh, we just tested it, it looks okay, that person is either ignorant or intentionally misleading the people because they have so much trust in him or her. Caxton, it takes at least 15 or 20 years for you to say that confidently.
Caxton, I want to get on to one more point before we quit today, but I want to tell our listeners that we've been doing some shows with Mark Hayden, medical doctor, Alabama, who has done inoculation as a potential way of taking care of the problem instead of vaccination. Okay. And you can go to my show and listen to his programs. But the last question that I want to ask you today, and we can come back and have you on next week, is, are and can reputable medical journals mislead doctors?
Absolutely. There's several journals. The New England Journal has several controversial pieces that they published this year. One of them was the Dr. Mara study that was withdrawn. It was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it was basically a sham. The Lancet also published this sham study. And I think if you look carefully, when, as an editor of a reputable journal, when scientists send you their papers and you read the entire article, and the article says, we're not sure if what we're saying is correct, that instantly drops that article. Should. But if, with respect to hydroxychloroquine, what they've done is, well, we're not sure whether hydroxychloroquine is effective or ineffective because of the way we did our study. So it becomes their study, which means it's not generalizable. But then they will, in the abstract section, say, ladies and gentlemen, hydroxychloroquine is ineffective, and make a bold statement that it's ineffective. But when you now read the paper and you're familiar with statistical analysis, you'll say, well, but hydroxychloroquine is effective. So why are they saying it's not? And that's not just the issue. They can say whatever they want, but a reputable editor of a journal like the New England Journal should not accept those kinds of journals. But when you think carefully, who sponsors those publications? The big pharma, as well as the NIH. So yes, they can mislead, and they've misled a lot of people this year. I can tell you that.
Caxton, so would you be able to come back next week and go on with some more of this highly profitable stuff that you have written in your new book, which is the HCQ debate, and talk to our people again?
Sure. What time are we looking at?
Well, we'll probably do Wednesday or Friday, but we'll continue with the program. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you. You've
given us a lot of great information, and you've got a lot more information in your book. And so I want to bring you back, and we will be talking next week. Start off with the 17-point smear campaign of hydroxychloroquine.
Sure. And people can get the book on Amazon.com. You know, it's already on Amazon.
Okay. Yes. And do you want to give them your website or any other contact information?
Sure. It's drcaxton.com, drcaxton.com. I don't do much on the internet except, you know, provide information. So if you check Amazon, you get more from Amazon about me than my own actual website. So I recommend that they get the book, though. Everyone needs this book, and they need to be able to talk to their senators. And if their senators are influential, they'll be able to do something about this. We need to be free. America is known for freedom, and they're taking away that freedom, even with this COVID. And it's methodical, and I think there is a reason behind it. I don't know what the reason is. I can't speculate. But I know with the science that we have and the information in the published journals that we have, America has been lied to. A lot of people are dying, and more are still dying today. It's not supposed to be this way. Third world countries that don't have all the resources that we have, they figured a way to handle COVID and cut down the infection and death rates. What's stopping us?
Well, some third world countries can go into a drugstore and get hydroxychloroquine
Absolutely.
Without a prescription.
Absolutely, without a prescription. We grew up that way. Yes.
But we can't do that here.
No. There's a good reason for it. But when the regulatory bodies begin to make laws and, you know, recommendations that distort reality and force doctors into a corner, you know, contrary to what should be based on science and medicine, that's poor, that's bad. And I think eventually, I hope someone will pick up a cue from all this and thoroughly investigate it if it can be done.
Well, thanks again for being on the program today.
Thank you.
Dr. O'Pair.
Thank you.
That's all, Neil.
All right. All right. That again was the Neil Haley Show, simulcasted with Freedom from Addiction, Truth Justice Police Service. See you guys next time.